Welcome to the original Italian-American podcast, keeping it real with Frankie D at ItalianAmericanLife.com. My guest today is Tony Marino, a pianist, composer, and recording engineer. Tony, welcome to the show.
Oh, thanks, Frank. I'm glad to be here. Yeah, thanks for the invitation.
Well, thank you. Thanks for being here. And before we get into your musical career, tell me a little bit about your background, where you're from, and then your family's Italian background.
Yeah, well, basically, I was born and raised in South Philadelphia, and right around on Rosewood Street at Broad and Porter. So I grew up in that house. In fact, prior to that, I remember when I was an infant, my parents had an apartment on, I believe it was 19, either 18th or 19th and Wolf. I forget the exact street between Wolf, Jackson and Wolf. But so anyway, I grew up in South Philly. I went to St. Monica's Elementary School. And after elementary school, I went to Bishop Newman High School. And then after that, I went to Retz Electronics School, and then I attended Drexel University at night. And what happened was my father had passed away when I was a junior in high school, and it made it a little rough. I mean, financially and stuff like that. But I'll tell you how we kind of got through that. So after high school, I wind up going to a technical school, and then I went to Drexel at night while I worked full time.
South Philly, when you were growing up, I'm not sure of your age, but was it very Italian, the neighborhood? Was there that market that I've always been aware of?
Yeah, it was. In fact, I was born in 61, so I'm going to be 63 this year, and I'll give you a time frame of, what things were happening. It was really interesting. It's amazing, right? So when I grew up, at first you really don't understand what, other neighborhoods are like and so forth, because I only knew about South Philly. And up until 69, my father didn't drive, he took public transportation. So I was pretty limited in terms of, where we had traveled to. Essentially, we spent, time in South Philadelphia.
And a lot of times, you're small, correct?
Yeah. And my grandmother lived on Darien Street, which is like around Snyder Avenue. Some of my aunts and uncles, live pretty close within walking distance. And in terms of Italian Americans, there was quite a few. It was predominantly like Irish, Polish, and Italian. And there was a Jewish synagogue too, that wasn't far away. So it was a mixture, mostly people with European backgrounds. And there's a famous restaurant in Philadelphia. Here's a quick story, right? So I remember it was about 1960, I don't know exact year. It was in the 60s, like sometime in the mid 60s, the maybe late 60s, a family moved in right next door to us. And the funny part of that, let me just back up one family before them, right? So there was this guy that lived next door to me named Gino. He went by Gino Martino. His last name was Marciano. And he was a singer. He was from Italy. And then he moved like up the block from us. So the street that I lived on was between Porter and Shunk. And I remember he opened the pizza parlor on Porter Street. And he lived in that house, up until he passed away. But anyway, this family moved in, and their last name is Sena, S-E-N-A. And I remember, they're really nice people. And my mom became very good friends with them, because she helped them when they came over, to get their citizenship papers and stuff. And so they became pretty close. But anyway, the oldest, there was a brother that was my age. His name was Mauricio. And the way I was introduced to him is we went over their house, and he threw a dart that stuck in my forehead. I can't make this up. It's kind of funny. Well, it wasn't funny then. I was a little bit distraught over that situation.
What provoked him to do that?
I have no idea. I think he was just, you know, playing around. I was thinking him in the eye or something like that, you know, and it was, I mean, this is a little hole. It wasn't, you know, big deal, but it was at the time. I mean, I was like screaming and stuff, but anyway, what happened was, they had several, they had a pretty big family, you know? So, but what happened was the oldest brother, I had really become like pretty close with him. His name is Gino. And what happened was, they lived directly next door to us. And I'm not sure if they were renting or not. I don't know. But they bought a house diagonally across the street from us. So they lived directly next door. And if I look right across the street, one house to my left, they bought that house. And it was a little tight, you know. But Gino worked in heating and air conditioning. And you want to talk about people, they're really working hard and they're successful. And I'll tell you why they are, is because they work very hard. And they had a good work ethic and are honest people. They opened a restaurant called La Familia, which is still in Philadelphia. It's a pretty, you know, it's a pretty big restaurant. So Gino, I remember him fixing the house up while he was doing heating and air conditioning. And I remember he had, you know, like a uniform that he wore. And, you know, while he was working in heating and air conditioning, they bought this old building and, you know, they call it Society Hill now. Philadelphia, and he and his brothers, they redid the whole place, you know, themselves, and they have a big wine cellar and all, but anyway, you know, it was kind of neat because it's a famous Italian restaurant. And I remember the mom Josephine and the father's name is Carlo. I remember them making like bomboloni's and all these really, really, you know, exotic pastries and stuff. And I remember going over their place and I leave and my clothes smelled like the foods that they were cooking, you know? And,
well, that's a beautiful story because that's what America's about. If, you have a vision and you want to succeed and you work hard, doesn't always mean it's going to happen, but you're upping your odds for success. That's a way.
That's exactly. And, you know, it's kind of funny. Like one of the things that I really got. So, you know, if I back up, like about my mom and dad. Okay. So you had asked like about, you know, how my family came over and
yes,
things like
that. Where's the family from in Italy?
My dad's side, and I never could remember this, and they passed away. So I, and in fact, all my uncles, I have one aunt that's alive. I haven't talked to her in a while on my dad's side. But my grandmother and grandfather on my father's side, one of them was born in Italy and came over at a very young age. And the other one was in their mom's belly. So their mom was pregnant when they came here. Now, I do remember my father's grandfather. He lived up the street from my grandfather on Colorado Street in Philadelphia. It was a 2200 block of Philly. And I remember him. He passed away. So that would have been my great grandfather. He passed away, I guess it was sometime in the 60s. And but both his mom and dad, you know, families or, you know, his actual parents came from Calabria. And I don't know. And the other thing, too, which also comes into play. They did have relatives too, that either migrated or were from Brazil, which is, this is pretty interesting too, because I found some stuff out that I'll tell you a little later. And my mom's side, she actually came from Italy, and I believe it was like around somewhere between 54 and 56. And, you know, so her family was sponsored by a church. And, you know, they had some pretty rough jobs and they went through some stuff. You know, I mean, it wasn't like they came here and, you know, they got benefits and things like that. They worked like dogs, you know, they rented a house. Eventually, you know, they all worked together and were able to purchase a house. And
where's mom from?
My mom is from Abruzzi. So I actually went to her hometown. She was from a place called Fraina. In the province of Chieti, in Abruzzi, and yeah, and it was pretty cool. Like I remember going there. It was right after my father passed away. My mom hadn't been back since she came over, and I think it was 56. I might be a year off or something like that. But I remember going there and I was meeting, well, first off, my mom's sister greeted us at the airport with two of my cousins. And I like when I saw this woman, I had never seen her. In fact, I don't even think I saw a picture of her. We arrived and we flew from Philly to New York and New York to Rome. And I remember seeing a woman. I said, "That's your sister." I'd seen her before my mom did, and it was really cool, And then, so she had two girls, and what's her name's Letizia and Roberta, I remember. And then, so that was in Rome. They had like a condo in Rome, and her husband was really nice too. I mean, it was just such a nice experience going there. But
And
what
you
was
went to
really,
mom's hometown as well.
yeah, and that was really wild because when I went,
And you
my
were
mom,
like an upper teenager at this point.
I was 16 at the time.
16. Okay, so I
Yeah, I
mean,
was.
you were old enough to know what was going on and understand and
Oh
remember.
yeah,
Okay.
sure. And the one thing that I really regret, and right now my son is doing what I should have been doing, was to study the Italian language. And I'll tell you, part of that would happen, so why I didn't pursue that as heavily as I really should have, right? So we go to my mom's hometown, and my mother, one of her sisters, she comes from a really big family because her dad was married and he had a lot of children. Some of them passed away, but he had either 12 or 13 children with his first wife. And then his wife passed away. And then he married my grandmother, who was significantly younger than him. So he had a son that was almost the age as my grandmother from his first marriage. And then he had either 12 or 13 children with her. And not all of them live, though. You know what I'm
Excuse
saying?
me.
So.
So he had like 12 kids with his first wife. She passes. He marries a younger woman and has 12 more kids.
Right. So I think there was about
Wow.
25, and I don't remember meeting 25 aunts and uncles.
Oh,
So
wow.
it was significantly lower than that.
Oh.
But they had it real. I mean, it was really rough out there,
Sure.
in Italy. They went through some stuff like with the war and all. And
Definitely in that area, especially in Abruzzo, yes.
oh yeah. And well, anyway, so my mom, one of her sisters was married to a guy named Nick Consilvio, who was one of my favorite uncles. In fact, there's a funny joke I remember, which I will not tell because it's dirty and it's really funny, but it would be insulting to a lot of people. But he was a really nice guy. But anyway, we went to the hometown. We went and visited his father, and honest to God, it was almost like going into the future on my uncle, because he looked exactly like my uncle, and just a little older. He was maybe about, I don't know, maybe 18, 20 years older than him. And I remember he actually had the hat that my uncle wore when he was in the army, and he let me wear it, and it was really cool,
Well,
and
that's
my
very nice. That's good you got to do that, and especially you got to go with your mom. That was great. Did
yeah
you ever make any other trips to Italy?
I only went to Italy once. I was in Europe twice, so it was a night, I'm telling you, it was 78. So my father passed away in May of 78, and we went out in June of 78. I stood there for 2 weeks, but I had I was playing music full time. So my piano teacher, he's another guy I'll tell you about, he's Italian American. My piano teacher filled in for me, so I had to get back home. And my mom stood there, I think she stood for probably, it might have been like 2 months. So I flew back by myself. I was only 16. I came back, and like I said, I had a bunch of gigs that I had to play. But no, and then the other time I went to Europe was for work. I went to Croatia back, it's almost 20 years ago now. So yeah, I was in Croatia once, but
Well, at
my
least you
son.
got to, if you never go, at least you got to go that one time. And you went to mom's town. I think that's awesome. You're saying your son though is more
Oh yeah,
preferring Italian.
I'm really proud of him. What happened was, we moved around a lot because of my job. We moved quite a bit. We lived all over the country. And just recently, my son, I'm just so proud of him. We happened to be in New Jersey when he was of college age. And unlike me, he's pretty talented athletically. So he was just a pretty good basketball player. And the only thing he had going against him is, for a basketball player, you know, he's above average in height for a man. He's about 5'11". And these kids were enormous. Like, the shortest kid was like 6'6 or something. And we have pictures of him on his basketball team when he played in college. And he's like, he looks like a little dude. You know, you think he was a, you know, a midget, you know, and he's like 5'11". These kids were enormous, you know. But anyway, it was kind of neat. When he graduated, he went to St. Joe's College in Brooklyn, you know. So after he got his bachelor's and master's degree, there, as an accountant. And he really loves New York, and that's where he lives. But he took an assignment in London, and almost every weekend he would travel throughout Europe. And he went to, I think, Iceland, Greenland, and he's been all over the place. And I guess last year he went to Italy for 2 weeks, and he actually signed up. He's really into martial arts, and he's learning Italian. He started taking Italian classes. So he booked a 2-week trip. And the majority of the trip was him going to some classes in Italy and also taking jiu-jitsu in Italy, you know, so, which I thought was really cool. So he's traveled most of Europe by himself most of the time. And he's, in fact, in September, he's going back, and he's set up, you know, for taking Italian lessons. And he does every week. He has two Italian teachers that are in Italy.
Well, that's
so
great.
He's been watching movies and
that's awesome. I respect that. And you know what? We're never too old to just try to learn a little bit of the Italian, you know. Even at your age, you can learn Italian.
You know, and okay, so why didn't I learn Italian, right? Is the question I'm asking myself, and I'll let you know. So my dad was the youngest, so he had two brothers and a sister. And since he was the youngest, you know, like, well, I think both my uncles and my aunt spoke Italian, but my father had no reason to, because he was the youngest, and, you know, he just kind of had a bunch of English speaking buddies, and he never learned. So going back to my mom, when we first moved in my neighborhood, there was about probably more Irish people than Italians. And there was a lot of heckling, you know, in terms of, you know, people saying derogatory things. And even too, like, when I first moved up the street, you know, I'm trying to think, when I first moved up Rosa Street, I think it was about 1964. So I'm like 2.5, 3 years old. And I didn't have any brothers or anything. And I remember, you know, there were some kids that were Irish, and they beat me up. You know, I was a little guy, and they had brothers and stuff, so I was pretty much on my own. And I remember my grandmother visiting, and she spoke Italian, and several times I remember them teasing me about that. So it's kind of silly, because, you know, so I felt a little funny, and I just really didn't have to learn, because my dad didn't
speak. No, it was the times, and yours is probably a common story, you know what I mean? You know, but like I say, it's kudos to your son, and if you ever want to try, it's you know what it is nowadays with online, it's just so easy to, you know, take a nice little course, you know, and you could do it from your living room, and, you know, I think you should.
Eventually, but you know, when I was in high school, there was this is really funny too. So there's a guy named Del Mazzio Di Cristoforo. Di Cristoforo was his name. He ran like the Italian program at Bishop Newman. So I did take two years of Italian, and I was just terrible. And I remember, and I have this in my yearbook, my high school yearbook. So when I started out in high school, I wasn't really doing that well, because I just wanted to play music, and I really didn't think my education was that important. So, but this is funny. So I take the first Italian class, and at first it wasn't so bad, because the guy is talking English, and then, you know, he would relate to the Italian words. There's a couple things I picked up on, you know. So the second year, we go in, and everybody's talking Italian. I had no idea what was going on. And my mom was helping me a little bit, but I was really like, okay. So I was, you know, still taking like math and English and, you know, the whatever other subjects I had to take, but I was also taking piano lessons. I was studying, you know, pretty seriously on my own. And that required, I mean, I was practicing, oh God, in the summer, I would do like 10 hours a day. And when I was in high school, I was playing in a band full time. And I'll tell you how that whole thing came up. So I was playing music full time. And are you there, Frank?
Yes. Oh, yes.
Okay. I just, yeah, something weird happened. I can't
Oh,
see.
I see you. You don't have to see me. That's
Oh,
okay.
okay.
I
Yeah.
can hear you.
So,
I can see you.
yeah, I don't know what happened. All of a
Must have
sudden,
pushed like the, I don't know. It's
yeah,
okay.
maybe there's a screen. Oh, here you are. Yeah. There was a screen that popped up. But yeah, but anyway, what happened was I was trying to get my grades up, you know, so I was working hard. And this bass player's name was Nick Galassi. He used to help me with my algebra during the breaks when we were playing, you know. But anyway, I remember the last year, senior year, as I was graduating, I remember Delmazio calling me to stay after class. And he also ran the soccer program. He's a really good soccer player, you know. So he had this trick. He used to tell you, look at the clock, and he'd kick you in the butt. So he'd say, look at the clock. And he got next to me and gave me one of them sidekicks. He says, you know, I'm looking at your grades. He said, you know, you're doing pretty good. He says, in my class, he says, I can see if he says, if you had a 65, he says, you know, we can help you out. He said, you know, he says, if you had a 55, I'd help you out. He says, but you know, I forget my grade was, it was like a 39 or something out of 100 points. And he started calling me a stunad, but not so, he wasn't being mean. He was a really nice guy, you know. So he had me do a bunch of projects, and I wind up getting a C
You
in the
passed.
class.
Well,
And
that's good.
I mean, yeah, you know,
But
and
in your defense, if you were, well, okay, you brought up about piano. How did you get into music? Was this something in you? Did your parents, steer you towards that? Because obviously you didn't just take like lessons like an hour a week. You were very highly, heavy into it. Tell me about that.
yeah, so what happened was, you know, things were a little rough financially. Like my mom and dad. So I'll start out, and that'll kind of lead into it. My mom and dad both worked at Darris. It was a clothing manufacturer in Philadelphia, and a lot of Italian Americans, that at that time, you know, it was a job that you can get, and they sort of trained you. And so my mom was a sewing machine operator, and my dad was a cutter. And so what they did is basically they had these really long tables that they would lay, like cloth down, and then they would put a patterns over top of them. And then they had two types of knives. They had a straight blade and a round blade. And the round blade was just like a circular sharp blade that was used to cut like thin layers of the material. And then the longer one, the straight blade, would be used to cut material, you know, it might have been like maybe 4 or 5 inches high. So they'd have the pattern over top of these cloths, and you know, so as he's cutting the patterns out for the suits and pants and stuff, you know, he would be, you know, maybe cutting, you know, I don't know, maybe 20 pieces of cloth that would be assembled, you know, in the different stages of them manufacturing the clothes. So there's this guy. He's really good accordionist. His name is Nino Campagna, and he lives in South Philly. And I haven't talked to Nino. In fact, I actually dedicated a song to Nino. It's on one of my albums. It's called Nino. You know, so it's a tarantella that I dedicated to him. But Nino actually, he introduced my mom and dad, and they got married in 1959. So working in the clothing industry, you know, back in the 60s when the hippie movement sort of took on, there was a decline in suit sales, you know. You know, back in the 60s, the clothing industry in Philly started to slow down. In addition to that, I remember there was a Japanese company that made an automated machine to cut the patterns out. And a lot of the clothing manufacturers started to use that, which, you know, caused the reduction in the workforce, you know.
Yes.
So my parents met there, and there was my uncle worked there, my aunt worked there, and like I said, Nino worked there, you know. Things were like a little tough financially, and I was really bad at sports. I had no interest. I just didn't like sports when I was a kid. And you know, my dad had two jobs, so he was busy working. So I didn't really have like a pal to, you know, teach me how to play ball and stuff like that. So what happened, from when I was real little, I remember my father had bongos and I always used to play them. When I was a little kid, I used to watch Mitch Miller. I really liked it and all. But what happened, I was 7 years old and there was a guy that lived up the street from me named Carl Osborne. And he and I chipped in and we bought a shoe shine kit and we used to go shining shoes at the local taverns right around dinner time. And I remember I had a little shoe box under my bed and I used to save my money in there. So one day I happened to be listening to the radio and I heard this music and I don't know why it was so appealing to me. But it was Leon Russell and Mark Benno. And it was called Look Inside the Asylum Choir. So I remember hearing it. And you know, remember, I'm 7 years old, right? And I looked back and I was like, wow, but this is pretty funny. So I went to the store. There's a store on Passyunk Avenue. And I remember I was asking the guy for, and I remembered Leon Russell's name. I didn't remember Mark Benno's name. So I asked the guy, and he's really nice. He says, yeah, I have this album. He gave it to me and he said, you know, this is going to be special, he says, because they made a short amount of these as like the first cut. And then they had to change the cover because it had toilet paper on it or a toilet. And so this is the original one. And then the guy gave me a photograph of the Beatles, like an actual photograph. So somehow, when I guess the Beatles were in Philly, he had a picture of them, you know, and he gave it to me. And I remember stuffing that in the album, right? Which later I re remember. So I'll tell you about my piano teacher. I remember giving that to my piano teacher who loved the Beatles. And that was several years later, like almost 7 years. Maybe not, you know, I was maybe about 12 or so when I gave it to him. But anyway, so I hear this album. And you know, my parents really couldn't afford piano lessons, so I was shining shoes and I started taking lessons at my grade school. And I remember I had a little cardboard keyboard that would fold out of the book that I was using. It was like a little card, you know, and that's what I had to practice on. I didn't have a piano. And then the nuns used to let me practice on their piano, so I would go hang out at the convent until they had like a break in lessons, and I practice a little there.
Well, that's
So
amazing because it sounds like you kind of did this on your own from such a young age that you just, this is what you wanted to do and you went out and made it happen. So that's amazing.
oh yeah, no, it was really tough because you know, like I said, you know, it was kind of, my mom didn't want me to play music at all. I mean, she was totally opposed to it. And my father was busy working, and he, you know, for him, you know, he was just trying to get through life, I guess. You know what I mean? And I've been in that situation when, you know, I was bringing my kids up. You know, you're going to work, you're all burned out, you come home, you're beat up and stuff. But yeah, so I did that, and what happened was, this is kind of neat. My mom forced me, and I'm almost embarrassed to say this. She got me involved in taking tap dance lessons, and I wanted to play the piano. Now, wait to hear how this thing works out. This is wild. So there's this wonderful lady named Mrs. Del Governator. She was such a wonderful woman, and I was totally embarrassed to do the tap dancing, but I really loved this woman, like she was my mom or something. She was just really a nice lady. So anyway, I remember I got out of doing the tap dance lessons and I was still doing the piano thing on my own. And so that went on for a couple years. And what happened was, there was a community center that opened up the street from me, and there was a woman that was giving piano lessons there because I had to pay for it all. So I started taking lessons with her, and there was a bunch of musicians up my street. In fact, Frankie Avalon, the famous actor, his cousin lived up my street, and his name's Frankie Avalon, and he's a bass player, you know. So he's a little bit older than me. He might be like, I don't know, maybe 7, 8 years older than me. So there were bands,
Kind of a
and
mecca. It was a mecca for musical talent.
yeah, no, there was. It was amazing. And you know, when you're little, when you're around people, you don't know what you're around. You know what I'm saying? Like it's so here's what happens. This is wild. So studying with this teacher, and then I'm starting, you know, as I'm getting older, a lot of the musician people, I'm hanging with them and asking them questions about music, and they kept saying, "Hey, you gotta know what music theory if you really want to be a good musician." I didn't know what that meant, you know, because they just had me reading, you know, campfire races and Home on the Range and songs like yeah. And I listened to Leon Russell and I'm thinking, that's kind of cool stuff. And I wasn't really in a position to, play that. I didn't have that much experience at that time. So anyway, I wind up, I had, as I was doing that, I had jobs. So I started out doing the shoe shining and then I started working at a real estate agency delivering flyers. And then the Gino Martino guy I told you about that lived next door to me, he gave me a job at his pizza parlor. So I did that. Then I washed windows. We bought some paint. We used to paint like the little railings that were on people's houses in Philly, and they had like little gates on their basement windows. We used to paint those. I was working and still taking the piano lessons. That's how I paid for it. But I had a job working at a plumbing supply house. It was called Sam. It was the Miko's Plumbing Supply House. And oh man, that job, that was a tough job. I was moving like hot water heaters and stuff. I was only like 12. It was really tough work. So his nephew opened up a store, a music store. So Mrs. Del Governator, who I had for tap dance lessons, her daughter started to teach at my elementary school. And she was another person that was just a doll. So she, I had her like, I don't know, maybe fifth grade or something like that. Well, I wind up studying with her brother, who's a really accomplished pianist. His name's Bill Del Governatore. And his dad went by the governor. His name is Amelia Kerr Del Governatore. He went by Al or the governor. He used to play at the Latin Casino. So he played with Frank Sinatra and Louis Prima and all these big acts that used to come into Philly prior to the casinos. So Bill, he really played a major part in my life because he was just such a wonderful guy. And for a while things were really bad financially. He was actually giving me free piano lessons twice a week. I mean, this is a kind of quality of family that Bill was from. He really, really helped me. So anyway, I start working at Sam D'Amico's music store, and I was, putting drum kits together and stuff. And you had to see the people I met there. And I didn't even know who these guys were. I remember the Grateful Dead came in to buy stuff. I had no idea who they were. And then there was some really, really good musicians. There's a guy named Joe Fortunata, Frank DiBussolo, Pat Martino, Jimmy Bruno. I mean, these guys are really good,
Well, that was probably a perfect setting for you because you loved music and now you were working in it. So you're meeting musicians, you're just around it. That probably added to your professional career in music.
Oh, absolutely. And what happened was, so I was a freshman in high school, right? So So you figure I started working at Sam's in 75, and that's the year I started high school. I was 13 years old. So what happened was we got a big delivery of like amplifiers and the store was kind of small. It was a row home that Sam bought and he converted it into a store. So we had all these amplifiers and stuff, and the store was kind of a mess, and I didn't have a lot of room. So you pretty much had to make space, unpack something, and then get all that packaging out and then bring the next thing in. So as I'm doing that, some guy comes in and he says, "Hey, I want to buy a microphone." And I knew a pretty good bit about microphones and drums and guitars and stuff. So, I had a couple suggestions and we're trying to figure out, what he wanted, money wise and what he was going to use it for. So I'm looking around and I couldn't get to a PA system. So in the piano room where they gave piano lessons, they had what is, I don't know if you're familiar with like a Leslie speaker. It's an organ speaker and it has a rotating horn. So when you hear like a fast vibrato on an organ, that's what they used to do. Now they do it electronically, they synthesize it. But so anyway, I get this microphone and I said, I really apologize. I said, I could plug it in upstairs. I said, we have, it's an organ speaker, but you'll get an idea what it sounds like. So he went up, he tried the microphone, he's just talking into it. And there was an acoustic piano there. So I said, hey, let me see something. So I turned the rotating speaker on I put the microphone in the piano. I start playing a little bit, and you know, just to hear it, because I was like, you know, I wonder what that would sound like, you know. So the guy says, "You play piano?" And I said, "Yeah." He said, "You know, we need a piano player in our band." He said, "Would you be interested?" Yeah, and I was playing in like some bands, you know. In fact, you know, I had some friends that were like my age, and we had, you know, little rock bands and stuff like that. So I said, "Sure," you know. And I also got one of my buddies in who was a guitar player. So I said, "Hey, this guy Fred, you know, he's really good. You know, you may want to check him out too." So anyway, the guys came over my house, and my mom, and mostly my mom, was a little skeptical because she wanted to make sure, you know, this wasn't, you know, a drug infested band.
Exactly.
Yeah. So the guys come over, everybody's from Italy. Everybody
wow.
was from Italy, right? And so we auditioned, and what happened was, this guy Fred was a really good guitar player, but they also had this musician named Mike, and he was a sax player, and they thought that that would round the band off better. So it was piano, bass, drum, sax, and the vocalist played guitar. So they thought that was a better option. And I really felt bad because my friend Fred and I were playing, and you know, it was an opportunity that, you know, it really worked out. It was a big blessing. So I auditioned for the guys, and it was for a few months. And so I'm trying to think. I think it was like around June or July of 1975. And then I started playing with them like around Thanksgiving time. You know, and I played piano with them, and it was kind of funny because they would talk Italian, and even some of the tunes, like, they would say them, and I didn't know, and they'd maybe hum a couple notes, like, "All right, I know which one that is."
That was nice, though. You were around that atmosphere, so.
Yeah, so, we played so many weddings, and we even did, like, after-hours clubs. We used to play a lot of the feasts, like the Feast of St. Anthony in Delaware, and there was Mount Carmel Club in Norristown, PA, that we played, and there was Bridgeport, and we played at the St. Charles Seminary.
Well, that's great. That's so nice to be a part of that stuff as well. Tell me about some of your albums now. Now that what you
oh doing, well,
past,
yeah. So okay. So if I fast forward, when I was in high school, I said my father had passed away. I was going to go to music school, and it turned out there's two other significant people that helped me. My dad worked with a man. So when the clothing industry died out, my dad took a job in the sheriff's department, and he worked as a deputy sheriff. And there's a guy named Ernie Hopkins who worked with my dad. And Ernie was a sax player and a piano player and a vocalist. And my dad hooked me up with him. And I was really, you know, I was maybe 12 or 13. And I remember Ernie. I learned a lot from Ernie too. He and I, it's funny, we never sat down on a piano together, but you know, he played with Billie Holiday. He played with Thelonious Monk. He played with Dizzy Gillespie. He played with, you know, and he was friends with John Coltrane. So he used to give me a lot of music pointers and stuff. And I remember him telling me how tough it was to be a full-time musician. And he left being a full-time musician and started working in the sheriff's department so he could be home with his family. So he had three daughters. I remember his wife, Dolores. I was pretty good friends with her because I used to call him up and talk to him. And she would get on the phone, and we would talk for a long, long time. And I actually met her once, you know. She's a really nice lady. But so I remember Ernie and also this guy, Joe Fortunato, who was a Philly sax player. Both of those guys told me, he said, you know, if you're going to make a living playing music, it's not easy. And for my age and stuff, I was, you know, making pretty good money. And even after my father passed away, I was able, you know, to support myself and help my mom out. And I was, you know, I was playing between, I would say, minimally three nights a week and sometimes six and seven nights a week, you know, while I'm going to high school full time, you know. But I remember them guys telling me, they said, listen, you know, music will always be there. And you're not married yet, and you don't have, you know, I had financial responsibilities then, but they said, you know, it's a different story now, you know, when you really get out and, you know, you have to, you know, support your children and stuff. So I auditioned for music college, and what happened was I took a bunch of Army aptitude tests in high school. And so my math was slightly above average. My English was slightly below average. But my abstract reasoning skills were way off the charts. I mean, I was like in the upper one percentile. So they recommended that I do something technically. So what happened was there was a school that I don't think it any longer exists. And why am I telling you this? Wait till you see how this thing falls in. It's amazing. So I wound up going to this place called Retz Electronic School. Before I went there, we did two records with this band called Idea 71. And that was the band I played in all through high school and then through getting through tech school. And we did two records. We did an album at Frank Virtue's recording studios. And I don't even own a copy of the album. And then we did a 45 in Alpha recording studios. And Mick Jagger was recording, I think, before the session before we got in there, which I thought was pretty cool.
Yeah, that definitely is.
It was pretty wild. So we did this 45, and I remember the recording engineer who I had met there. His name was Fred Galletti. Him and his brother Charlie used to have a recording studio called the Sound Room in Upper Darby, PA. So Fred was the recording engineer, and this is when I was in high school. When I get to Retz Electronic School, it turns out that Charlie Galletti was my teacher, and I didn't know that Charlie and Freddie were brothers because I barely knew Fred when we were doing a recording session. So it turned out that both of these guys were involved in music. Fred was a guitarist, and Charlie was a drummer, and they're both recording engineers. They did a bunch of disco albums, and I'm trying to think. Engineering one came back.
Tony, you seem to be breaking up.
Oh, yep, yeah, you're Frank.
Yes, I'm sorry. I lost you. I think the internet went out, so.
Yeah, no, mine every once in a while is kicking
Oh,
out too.
okay.
So yeah, so anyway, what happened was I was working at RCA, and I was only playing, this was in Camden, New Jersey. So I went from Camden to Morristown, and I was hardly playing at all. I was playing maybe an hour a week, because I was going to Drexel at night working full time. And but anyway, it's just like February of 1987 was an amazing time because I met my wife, and I also heard for the first time Paquito de Rivera. And I don't know if you've ever heard him. He's a saxophone player from Cuba. The guy's amazing. He's a clarinetist, right? So I heard him on the radio, and I met my wife that same month, right? So while I was studying with Bill and the other person that was significant to it, and it's kind of hard because there was a lot of things going on. My friend Bill DelGovernatore, who was my piano teacher, he introduced me to a guy named Tom Lawton. And I took lessons with Tom, I guess like right after I had graduated from technical school. But my school workload was so tough. And working full time, I was taking 2 to 3 classes at night. I really put the piano on the back burner. So anyway, 1987, I hear Paquito de Rivera. I went to Jiffy Lube. I was working at the RCA in Morristown, New Jersey at the time. So I went to Jiffy Lube, and I hear this guy being interviewed, and he was just hilarious. And then I heard his music, and it just blew me away. I couldn't believe what I was hearing. So I did this. So I meet my wife. So I'm introduced to my wife, and I wind up talking to her on Valentine's Day. Somebody had given me her number, and her and I met on March 1st of 1987. So February of 87 was amazing because, like I said, I hear Paquito and I meet my wife. By the way, meeting my wife was a lot more important. But anyway, this thing with Paquito, I couldn't believe what I was hearing. So I started buying his records and stuff. And I actually, my wife and I went to go see him. He played at Penn's Landing. And I remember hearing his trumpet player that his name is Claudio Roditi. I couldn't believe when I, okay, so I hear Paquito on a radio in an interview. I couldn't remember his name. And one day I'm driving home and I hear his music on WRTI, which is, it was jazz radio station. I think they do like classical music now, but that was like my favorite radio station. I drove right to the record store and bought two cassette tapes. And I listened to these tapes. I wore them out. I couldn't believe it. And so my wife and I wind up going to Penn's Landing. He was playing a concert out there. And I can't even tell you how it changed my life. I'm hearing these guys playing. It was like Latin jazz. All right. So I finished grad school. This is about 1994. And I actually got to meet Paquito. And in the meantime, what happened was the electronics industry was kind of closing a little. You know, there was a lull in the work. So I took a job at the Philadelphia Stock Exchange as a C programmer. And I just finished my graduate degree. So I meet Paquito de Rivera, and this was like November of 94. And then in 95, I got a phone call from ITT in Fort Wayne, Indiana. And, you know, they were looking for electrical engineers. And so I wind up interviewing, I get the job. And right before we leave, I meet Paquito de Rivera again. He was playing at Glassboro State College. So this is April of 95. And he gave me his number and stuff, you know, and I couldn't believe it. I mean, the guy was like absolutely amazing, but his trumpet player was no longer with him. So they kind of, you know, he went off on his own, and Claudio did. And he got another trumpeter who's just, you know, really amazing too. Diego Arcola is his name. But all right. So 94, right before, you know, we moved out to Fort Wayne, I went back to my piano teacher, Tom Lawton, and I went back to studying with him. So when we moved to Fort Wayne, I remember thinking, because, you know, we started kicking the music thing off again. In fact, there's a drummer friend of mine, and here's another one. Pat Martino is a famous jazz guitarist, right? Well, there's a drummer friend of mine that I grew up with. His backyard faced Pat Martino's backyard, right? And this guy's name's Carlos Gaffetta. Him and his father are both drummers, you know. So there's myself, Carlo, and Vince Montana. He's a famous musician that did a lot of disco stuff. One of the guys I work with at RCA happened to be his recording engineer. So myself, Carlo, and Mark, you know, we were putting a little band together, and that kind of, you know, broke up because we relocated to Fort Wayne, right? So anyway, when I came to Fort Wayne, the first week I was here, there was a guy that worked as a DJ at the local radio station, WBNI. And I met him. He worked at ITT, and he introduced me to some of the musicians out here. So the first week I was here, I met a bass player named Jim Baker and his drummer named Steve Smeltzer and a piano player named Jim Steele. These guys are really good musicians. Well, I started talking to them. They invited me to a jam session, and then I told them, hey, you know, I'm going to put this band together. And then before you know it, I had a band. The other thing that happened, another Italian American named Andy Carini also relocated here to Fort Wayne. And he is a musician, and he had a recording studio. So he came out to hear my band, and he started bugging me. He said, man, you know, you should do some recordings. And at the time, I only had two songs. I wrote my first song when I was 12. I wrote my second song when I was 15. And I had two songs. So he said, no, you know, we should record. And you know, so his studio, he was trying to put it together. So he didn't have a whole lot of equipment. And there was a company called International Harvester that was out here in Fort Wayne. They had closed, and they were renting spaces out, and he rented a little office there. So he had a mixing board, and, you know, he had a couple rooms. And so I remember us scrounging microphones together and stuff. And I remember we did some recordings, and there's a guy named Mike Patterson, who is a multi-instrumentalist. He was, he played bass and percussion. And there's a guy named Dave Street, who's an amazing saxophone player and a trumpeter who passed away. His name is Dave Sapp. And I'm trying to think who, and Andy was a recording engineer. So anyway, we did our first album in his studio. And after I did, it was called Tony Marino, the Latin Jazz Project. And it was, you know, it was okay. I mean, you know, considering the way we had it recorded, like we had to do just the piano, bass, and drums at first because we didn't have enough microphones. And then the horn players came in and you know, overdubbed the parts. So I wind up figuring out how many minutes of music we had, and then I go home and write a song, and then come back. I you know I tape the parts on a cassette and say, hey, you know, here's this. And you know, so we wind up getting through that album. But after I did that CD, I sent it to a bunch of people, and Paquito de Rivera was one. And so I remember talking to Paquito, and I, you know, when I sent it, I wasn't like, hey, you know, I put this great thing out. I said, you know, I'm really trying to get better. Can you please let me know, you know, just be honest with me. Like, what do I need to do to get better? So I wind up, he put me in contact with a bunch of people. And I mean, this CD went out to some very famous musicians, right? And I remember telling him about how much I love the way Claudio Rotini played. So he said, well, give him a call. So I did. I couldn't believe we were on the phone for like 3 hours. He invited me to Chicago to meet with him, you know, and I couldn't believe it, you know. So here I go. I go to Chicago, and he wind up introducing me to this amazing Brazilian musician named Breno Sauer. And I remember I went to the hotel to meet up with Claudio. He wasn't there. He gave me a number to call, and I wind up calling this number, and it was a woman named Noza Sauer, who's an amazing Brazilian vocalist. I mean, this woman is like top of the line. So when I called her up, I said, Claudio told me he's going to meet me at the hotel. He's not here. So she said, oh, he's out with my husband. He should be there shortly. They just left. So here, when he comes, I don't know who Breno is at the time, but I knew of him. So you know, I see Claudio, we shake hands. And I was like, I couldn't believe I'm meeting like one of my heroes. And he said, this is Breno. And I think it's Breno Sauer. Because the woman that I talked to, she didn't tell me her last name. She just said, oh, they're coming over to, you know, back to the hotel. They told me to tell you that. Well, they invited us over to Breno's house. We had dinner there, you know, and then afterwards we went to the jazz showcase, and he was playing with Slide Hampton. So I couldn't believe it. You know, I'm in the car with Claudio, and I remember him and I driving to the concert before he played in my car. And I remember driving, I'm thinking, man, like Claudio Rodriguez in my car. I can't believe it. And he was like so nice. So he actually introduced me to a lot of different people. So I started studying with Breno, and Breno got me into Brazilian music and tango music. And what happened was Andy Carini, who was the recording engineer, he was real into MIDI, and I was totally into acoustic music. I had no interest in electronic stuff and all. And I remember him telling me, he said, you know, you can do recordings at home, and, you know, it's a lot more economically feasible, you know, to be able to do this, to, you know, write your music. And you know, like I said, all this stuff just came together. So I wind up, you know, getting into doing MIDI recording. So I did my second album called Note for Note. And I did it all MIDI while I was studying with Breno. And he was teaching me like the authentic Brazilian rhythms. And, you know, we were part of the lessons. We would sit down and just do drum rhythms together. Or he would show me how to play a bass line. And then, you know, we would do the different parts and stuff. And while I was taking my lesson, his wife was making recordings of different artists, like Oster Piazzolla, who's the, you know, tango musician, Joao Donato. And it just, you know, it was amazing the stuff that they had turned me on to.
You have definitely succeeded excellently, and you really persevered, and it sounds like you've been working hard since you were basically out of the womb. I give you credit. We are out of time, but how do we find your music?
Well, we're on all the streaming platforms, but my website is tonymarino.us. So it's TonyMarino.us. And if you go there, I mean, it has all the albums listed, but we're on Spotify, YouTube, Deezer, all the streaming platforms. Unfortunately, we don't make CDs anymore because they just don't sell. So everything's done through streaming. So it's tonymarino.us. You know, and everything's out there. In fact, this year we put two albums out. One of them is called Friday Night, that was put out in April. And then I did my second Tango album, which is called Tango Improvisations. And then in October, I have another album coming out. It's like a jazz rock album. And that's called the original. Geez, I forget. My wife's working on the artwork now. So it's called, I think, original jazz rock compositions or something like that. So that'll be out in October.
Okay, well, sounds good. Well, Tony, thank you so much for your time and all your beautiful music, okay?
Hey, thank you, Frank. I appreciate you inviting me, and thank you. So.